Good morning. This is The Daily with Sil Stein, now through Spotify for podcasters. Good morning, everyone. I hope everyone's having a wonderful start to their Saturday. And I just wanted to say good morning. I'm enjoying my donut shop coffee, and I hope you're enjoying your coffee as well, because here on The Daily with Sil Stein, now through Spotify for podcasters, we also present the Coffee Chronicles, because it all begins with coffee. I hope you're having a blessed one, everyone, as I am. I'm so grateful to be here, and I know there's a newsletter coming soon. I know I keep saying it's July in the beginning, and there's been a few setbacks because of my schedule, and I have to get with my PAs, especially the wonderful Tara James, who's been busy as well. We're both busy, so once I get that settled up, we're going to go ahead and send out that newsletter to you guys. So, and then you'll be able to subscribe to The Daily with Sil Stein now through Spotify, for podcasters. So, I want to get started with the show today. I'm going to be talking about, because I want to be able to continue with what the show is about, which is about, you know, talking about books and coffee. I'm enjoying my coffee, which is the donut shop. Sorry, and I want to go ahead and talk about the recommendations of books, and I want to talk about new authors. But first and foremost, I want to say congratulations to my amazing friends, authors, who won the Wizard Award. It's like a children's award that they're giving to authors. And it's Destiny and John Constantine, The Journey with Dad. They just republished their book. I hope that you will take the time to check it out, because they've republished it. I think it came out on Father's Day. That was when it they were pre-ordering. You could pre-order it. Now it's out, and they've won a really awesome award. So shout out to both of them. They have the podcast Chasing Stories, and it used to be Chatting with the Constantines, and it's John and Destiny, a father-daughter duo, and they have this wonderful book they came up with that they're republishing. And it's The Journey with Dad. I hope you'll check that out and get a copy. I have a Kindle copy. I can't wait to write a review. So I hope that you'll check out their book. So I want to start with that. And I'm hoping I will have them next week on Monday. And then hopefully the podcast will be available right after that. So I wanted to say that first. But when we come back, I'm going to continue on the book by Walter Mosley, This Year You Write Your Novel. I want to go ahead and continue with writing tips, and I hope that you'll continue and tune in to the podcast, and we'll be right back with more. And we're back to The Daily with Sil Stein, now through Spotify for podcasters. So I'm going to go back to This Year You Write Your Novel, which if you tune in to my other episodes, you'll see that I had started talking about this wonderful book that was written by the amazing author Walter Mosley. Now let me share a little bit of background just for those that have not listened to the other episodes, and you might get caught up. So, this book was a book that we used in one of my creative writing classes, and this was a book that was recommended, and I've loved it ever since. And it says, let me read you about Walter Mosley, first of all. Is the author of 25 books, including The Easy Rollins and Fearless Jones Mysteries, and numerous other works of fiction and nonfiction. He was born in Los Angeles and lives in New York, and he's a best-selling author. Walter Mosley has penned a marvelously encouraging and far more important useful guide to writing. That's from the San Diego Union Tribune. A straightforward, friendly guide for aspiring writers. Maria Russo, Los Angeles Times. So this is the book. This is what the back says of it. No more excuses. You can write a novel now. Let the lawn get shaggy and the paint peel from the walls. The best-selling novelist Walter Mosley advises. In this invaluable book of tips, wisdom, and practical guidance, Mosley teaches you how to create a daily writing regimen that fits your lifestyle. Develop a narrative voice that suits the tale. Hook readers with dynamic characters. Get past those first challenging sentences and into the heart of a story. And much more. Offering both motivation and instruction, Mosley provides the tools you need to turn out a first draft in just 3 months. And then revise it into something finer. So don't put your idea on the back burner. Start writing today. So this is why I wanted to get on this book, because I've been dealing with my own procrastination, which is what we're going to talk about a little bit today. Touch up on that. Give me a moment here. Okay. I'm going to start in the section where it says avoidance, false starts, and dead end thinking. Many writers in writing spend a lot of time avoiding the work at hand. I'm guilty of that. That's what I'm saying right now, not what he wrote, but this is perfectly fits me. The most common way to avoid writing is by procrastination. This is the writer's greatest enemy. Yes, it is. I agree with that. There is little to say about it, except that once you decide to write every day, you must make yourself sit at the desk or table for the required period, whether or not you are putting down words. Make yourself take the time, even if the hours seem fruitless. Ideally, after a few days or weeks of being chained to the desk, you will submit to the story that must be told. Straightforward procrastination is an author's worst enemy. But there are others. The writer who suddenly has chores that have gone undone for months, but that now seem urgent. The diarist who develops a keen wish to write about her experiences. That means like a person that writes a diary today instead of writing her book. The good Samaritan who realizes that there's a world out there that needs saving. The jack of all trades who, when he begins one project, imagines 10 others that are equally or even more important. Forget all that. Don't write in the journal unless you're writing a chapter of your book. Save the world at 8:30 instead of 7. Let the lawn get shaggy and the paint peel from the walls. For the time you have set aside to write your novel, don't do anything else. Turn the ringer off on your phone. Don't answer the doorbell. Tell your loved ones that you cannot be disturbed. And if they cannot bear to live without you, go write in a coffee shop or library. Rent a room if you have to. Just make the time to write your book. A final note about process. And this is in the beginning of the This Year You Write Your Novel. It's the process of writing a novel is like taking a journey by boat. You have to continually set yourself on course. If you get distracted or allow yourself to drift, you will never make it to the destination. It's not like highly defend train tracks or a highway. This is a path that you are creating, discovering. The journey is your narrative. Keep to it, and there will be a tale told. So that's what he says. And as far as getting into how you write and why you should write. And I think I went into the narrative voices. I believe I did, but I'm going to go ahead and review that. And if it sounds like repetition, I'm going to start with the elements of fiction, the narrative voice. And I believe There was a show that I did where I covered that, but I'm going to refresh it. So this will be for anyone that has not listened to the episode. It's kind of like you can catch up on this today. And the book is called This Year You Write Your Novel by Walter Mosley. M-O-S-L-E-Y. The narrative voice. The voice that tells the story is the first thing the reader encounters. It carries us from the first page to the last. We, the reader, must believe in this narrative voice, or at least we must feel strongly for that voice and have a definite and consistent opinion about it. The first words and all the rest you encounter throughout the novel give information, images, and emotions all at once, much the way it happens on the street corner with a guy telling tales. Man, and he gives an example. Man, come out of that burning building, Joe Feller said, his voice straining and hoarse, red as a lobster with smoke coming out of his clothes. Okay. The brief snippet of dialogue brings us immediately into an event that we know some things about, while suspecting others. There was a building on fire, we are told. There's a man who was in the fire for that same reason. Maybe he was a victim or a hero. It is even possible that he set the fire. We don't know, but Joe Feller's voice has authority, and we're ready to hear him out in order to find out more about this smoking red man. This is narrative voice. Actually, it is more than one voice. There's the character, Joe Feller, speaking, but there's another voice, the narrator, telling us what the speaker said and explaining the speaker's emotional state by describing the strain in his voice. There are many kinds and styles of narrative voices, and it is imperative that you decide which one you will use to tell your tale. Although there might be thousands of subtle differences in the narratives of the novels you've read, there are only three types that you need to be aware of. Actually, there are four, but the last one is a voice you should never use, your own. So it says, first-person narrative. The first-person narrative, put simply, is when the I voice is telling the story. I met Josh Sanders on the first day of March, 1963. He was a shy man with big hands and an earthy smell about him. He reminded me of my grandfather, whom I hated more than Judas. And he continues, we know from the first word that we have an intimate relationship with the narrator of this tale. He or she has a name, an age, and a history that we will learn about as we read. This narrator is our conduit to the novel. She might be a college graduate, or an illiterate. She may be enchanting, cantankerous, or even untrustworthy. Every bit of information we learn about this narrator helps us understand more of the story being told. This is the most familiar storytelling voice, the one which we all naturally relate the stories of our days to those we know. In a first-person narrative, you're stuck with this one voice. Therefore, this character, or at least her point of view, POV, must be engaging. Her story must evoke strong feelings in us. We are compelled to empathize with her experiences and care about the world she moves through. We have an emotional connection to this narrator, and because of this bond, we want to learn what happens in her story. That's what he says about first-person narrative. And then he continues, when I say that you must be true to this narrator's voice, I mean, among others, that you can't change her personality to fit the story. She cannot read the minds of other characters. She can know only what she has experienced or learned. And she is limited by her circumstances, her physical location at any given moment, her education, situation in life, her emotional state. The first-person narrator is the doorway through which all the information of the story will pass. Therefore, the sense the reader has of this character must never be challenged. You can never undercut her authority. You cannot For instance, insert a phrase such as, Sally never knew her mother because Nelda Smith had died in childbirth. Who said that? Not Sally, of course. The writer said it. The writer's voice has intruded into the story. This will destroy the reader's faith in the words he or she is reading. The novel careens out of orbit and the story is lost. You need to convey specific information. Sally must either think it, say it, read it, remember it, or hear someone else talking about it. This example is extreme, but the writer can make other more subtle and yet equally disastrous intrusions. Your main character, let's say, is not very well educated. We know this because of her limited vocabulary, her simple sentence structures, and hints that have been dropped along the way. But somewhere, someone asks her a question to which she answers, "Indubitably, my good sir." Say what? Who said that? The writer, not the character. Or perhaps your narrator all of a sudden understands something behind another person's actions in a way that strains the credibility or the credulity of the reader. For the whole story up to this point, Sally hasn't understood anything psychological, but suddenly she thinks. He seemed to have issues with his mother. I could tell this because he would never look women directly in the eye. This is perfectly fine to say if the reader believes from the book so far that Sally has the kind of insight into psychological motivations, but she has not given any indication of having this sort of sensitivity in the first 200 pages and then magically manifests this ability, the reader will become confused and the story will miscarry. The first-person narrative is a powerful but also very difficult narrative form. It is powerful because you are intimate with the emotions and internal processes of the very real human being telling you the story. It is difficult because the rendering of that character has to be pitch perfect for the reader to believe in her. There is also the difficulty of making sure that the first person narrator is interesting enough to want to listen to for hundreds of pages. So that's him on the first person narrative. I'll be right back with the third person narrative, and we'll be right back to the Daily with Sil Stein, now through Spotify for Podcasters. And we're covering the book This Year You Write Your Novel by best-selling novelist or author Walter Mosley. Back to third person narrative here on the Daily with Sil Stein, now through Spotify for Podcasters, and we're covering the book by best-selling novelist Walter Mosley. We covered first person narrative, and now I'm going to go into third person narrative, and then we'll probably do the wrap up today, and I'll continue with the omniscient narrator and final notes on narrative voice. Or I may just cover it all today and then start showing and telling next week. So I may just go into that. But let's go into third person narrative. The third person narrator, he says, is the voice in which we naturally tell stories about things that happen to people other than ourselves. This narrative voice is not a full person. Picture the third person narrator as a small, emotionless, but intelligent creature sitting on the shoulder of the character who is experiencing the story. This creature perceives events from the perspective of this character, and every now and then has glimpses of what this character might be feeling or thinking. Brent Farley entered the room, looking around for his mother. Instead, he saw Alice Norman standing near the buffet. She noticed him and smiled before he had the opportunity to flee. "Hello, Alice," Brent said, holding out his hand. Her fingers were cold. And so Brent noticed were her eyes. As with the first person narrative, we are entering the story through the experiences of an individual. But in this case, we aren't so intimate with all the nuances of the character. Instead, we are viewing the world through the person of the intelligent eye perched on Brent's shoulder, an intelligence without emotional response. It is important that the third-person narrator have a distance from the passions of the novel's character. You begin to give the narrative voice a personality. It can confuse the reader, giving them the feeling that they are being told how to feel about and see this world rather than spying on it from behind a one-way mirror. He continues, the cooler third-person narrator allows us to see the world of this novel from a certain impartial remove. This gives a kind of balance to the fiction that permits the reader to more easily suspend their disbelief. This, I believe, is a steadier voice than the first-person POV. You are given information by an even tempered voice, which is good. At the same time, in this voice, it can be harder to bring out the emotional depth of your characters than in the first person. You can give momentary glimpses into the mind of the shoulder you're on, but you cannot, as a rule, get deeply into their heart. One benefit of this form of narrative is that the dispassionate observer can at times leap from the shoulder of one character onto that of another. Let us suppose that the meeting between Brent and Alice did not go very well. At the end of that chapter or section, Brent is left wondering if she suspects him of mishandling her affairs. At the beginning of the next scene, we find our narrative eye on the shoulder of Alice as she walks down the street in the long, darkening shadows of buildings her family once owned. She meets an old friend who tells her to watch out for Brent. He's not in any way a trustworthy man and would take the rest of her dwindling fortune if he could. So this is the example he gives on the next page. I just ran into him, Alice said. He seemed to want to get away from me as soon as possible. As a matter of fact, when I first saw him, he was looking my way, and I swear I thought he was about to bolt through the door. Noreen Padam's eyes got tight, giving her a contemplative air. As if Alice had posed a riddle. Maybe, dark-eyed Noreen said. Maybe, dark-eyed Noreen said. He was worried that you figured out one of his schemes against you and your family. Maybe he was afraid you'd make a scene. After this meeting, your narrator could jump to Noreen's shoulder, but I wouldn't suggest it. Third-person narrator should be picky about the experiences it uses to tell the story. He continues, this form of narration can utilize the POV of one, two, three, or more characters, but there has to be a reason for each narrative to exist. Your story is forced around a conflict. You should use a POV from each side of that discord. If the novel is about a corporate takeover, you might need 8 or 9 voices to cover all the subtle sides of the tale. It is possible to use only one POV to tell your story. Why, you ask? Why would I use the third person narrative for only one voice? Why wouldn't I just use the first person narrative instead? There might be many valid reasons for this decision. For instance, your characters may be a cipher to himself. He's not a reflective type who goes about articulating what he sees and feels. Conversely, he might be too expressive and flamboyant and in need of the cool reserve of a slightly removed POV. Those are just his examples of what he's saying. Narrative voice is a subtle thing, You have to decide what voice fits your task. But I will tell you that the third-person narrative will probably best serve your first novel, the one you are writing this year. This form is the most flexible and durable. One more thing you should know about this form. As I have said, the third-person narrator has some of the knowledge of the shoulders he's on. So when Alice sees Noreen, the narrative voice might be aware of the fondness Alice has for this young woman and might even possess some additional specific knowledge. Alice ran into Noreen turning the corner at 3rd and Barton Streets. A feeling of familiar warmth came over her when she saw her old friend. Alice observed that the dark-skinned young woman maintained only the broad facial features of her mother's Swedish stock. Everything else was inherited from her father, whom Alice had heard was a criminal lawyer from Bombay who migrated to Michigan because his Scandinavian bride wanted him to meet her halfway. So those are the examples that he gives on third-person narrative. And we will be right back with the omniscient narrator and then the final notes on the narrative, which will be the wrap-up. So we'll be right back to wrap it up, but I'm going to go into the omniscient narrator briefly and then the final notes on narrative voice. And we'll be right back to the daily with Silstein now through Spotify for Podcasters, covering the book by Walter Mosley, or best-selling author Walter Mosley, This Year You Write Your Novel. We'll be back. Hello, and we're back to the Daily with Silstein now through Spotify for Podcasters. And now we're going to cover the omniscient narrator by the book by Walter Mosley, This Year You Write Your Novel. The omniscient narrator is the most powerful and most difficult narrative form. The omniscient narrator, knows all. Excuse me. He could tell you the story about Brent and Alice and Noreen. But if he wanted to, he could also tell you about what is going on at that moment in Cuba, or relate the dialogue between fleas on a rat's back beneath the street where Noreen and Alice are talking. The omniscient narrator doesn't need any one person or some emotionless eye on the shoulder to tell the story. It is the all-seeing eye of God. So he says, here we go. Brent Farley walked into the room looking for his mother, but instead he found Alice Norman standing near the buffet. Alice noted that Brent seemed uneasy. It's almost as if he wants to get away from me, she thought. She's looking at me, Brent reflected, thinking that the red color in her dress was meant for a younger woman. Lauren Smith Jones, the club maitre d', noticed the two and remembered them as children running madly in mud-spattered jeans down near the stream behind the club. This voice is a potent one. Nothing that happens is beyond its reach. The omniscient narrator can cure cancer, explain what the meaning of life truly is, travel through space and time with impossible ease. The promise of such power is seductive, but it contains hidden dangers for the first-time novelist. The main problem is the reader. Can you convince him that you are all-knowing? Can your narrative maintain the tension between characters while at the same time speaking with such clarity and superior knowledge? The reader approaches the novel as a story that has to unfold in a certain unique fashion. She doesn't know where the tale is going. She doesn't know if Brent is really a bad man who is intent on beggaring Alice and her family. The first-person narrative, from Brent's POV, Brent would know his own intentions, but he wouldn't know the content of Alice's heart, and certainly would not be privy to the conversation between Noreen and Alice. The third-person narrator has no deep knowledge of any of the characters, so we have to rely on dramatic interaction to unearth the truth. But the omniscient narrator knows all. If he doesn't tell us something, it is because he decides to withhold the information. he does tells us it is the absolute, it is absolute truth with no gradations of gray. The omniscient narrator voice therefore runs the risk of killing the dramatic tension you are trying to create. This is not to say that one should never use this voice. Many, many novels, especially those written in the 19th century and earlier, use this voice magnificently. The proper omniscient narrator voice can be used effectively with the understanding that even the voice of God can have slight variations in rules by which it decides to impart information. For instance, your omniscient narrator might be so high and mighty that she doesn't waste time wondering about the truth or complex motivations of the characters she presents. For example, this is an example. Captain Jack Hayter was a seafaring man who got it in mind that he was in love with a princess. He gathered a company of rough and ready tars who were willing to follow the handsome young officer to the ends of the earth as long as there was plunder now and then along the way. Princess Jasmine Alonza Trevor McFord was aware of Hatter's passion, but she never let on if she would be a willing partner to his lust. When her girl servants talked about Hatter's promise to take her by force from her father's lands, Jasmine would smile mysteriously and change the subject to the weather. From this POV, the omniscient narrator could tell us many things about her characters, but prefers not to. The storytelling is held at a certain distance to keep the reader wondering on many levels. Will Jack take the princess? Will the princess welcome his advances? This is just one of many possible approaches an omniscient narrator might take. This voice spends most of its time disguised as a third-person narrator, but appears in its full force often enough to let us know that there is more to it. Or the omniscient narrator may place limits upon itself by letting information come out only in a certain time sequence or by individuals giving voice to their feelings. There are many ways to spin the omniscient narrator so that the unfolding of the novel is still a wonder to the reader. The problem is that this voice of God has to learn how to limit itself, whereas the first and third person narrative voices have built-in limits. So that's what he says on the omniscient narrator. And now we'll be right back with the wrap-up and covering the final notes on narrative voice. Back to the wrap-up of the Daily with Silstein, now through Spotify for Podcasters, where we've been covering the book by best-selling novelist or author Walter Mosley, This Year You Write Your Novel. We're covering final notes on narrative voice. He says, first and third person narrative voices bring with them limitations on what the characters in the novel can say and know. The first-person narrative can know only what the speaker knows. This tale is limited by the mind and senses, the situation and sophistication, the gender and education of the narrator. The third-person narrator benefits from different POVs, but can portray only one of these at a time. And there is the further limit that this dispassionate POV cannot most of the time delve too deeply into any one character's inner workings. These limitations may seem difficult and overly exciting, but I believe that they are the best thing for the first-time novelist. The restrictions placed on the prose by these rules are stringent, but they are also organic in the storytelling sense. That is to say, we live third and first person lives. Personally, we know what It is We Think and Feel. We pass through this life making silent comments on events going on around us. Sometimes we interact with people with conspicuous honesty, other times not so much. We feel love and hate and fear, and so does everyone else in the world. The fact that everyone knows life primarily through personal experience means that the first-person narrative is executed scrupulously, the reader will naturally identify with a voice. Similarly, we all have some experience with the third-person narrative. We have jobs in which people are continually talking to each other, talking behind each other's back, seducing, expounding, bragging, lying. We are often silent witnesses to encounters on the bus, on the street, or maybe even through apartment walls. We all know what it is to be a silent observer. So when presented with the experience of cool remove that the third-person narrator perfects, we feel that we can understand the story, or at least we are given an opportunity to understand. The omniscient narrator is a little larger than what we're used to. This form has no limitations that are not self-imposed. This does not mean that you cannot write a novel from this voice. The problem is that you have to be a consummate storyteller with extraordinary self-control to tell a story in this way. Sorry, I had to put a pause on it. There was a background noise, so I apologize for that. Now we're back to the wrap-up. I'm finishing up the final notes on the narrative voice here on the Daily with Silstein, now through Spotify for podcasters. So I left off with the problem is that you have to be a consummate storyteller with extraordinary self-control to tell a story in this way. Other voices are possible. Novels have been written entirely in the first person plural, told entirely by an unspecific we. Others address the reader as you throughout, but these are idiosyncratic and challenging approaches to storytelling. My advice is that you use the third-person narrative to write your novel this year, but of course, you will do as your heart tells you to do. So today we've covered on This Year You Write Your Novel by the amazing author Walter Mosley, who doesn't sugarcoat the book. He speaks bluntly and he tells you exactly what he thinks. And I think that's a very refreshing way to encourage whether you're a first-time writer, author, thinking of publishing, whether you've already published books. I think there's always a good time, you can always go back and refresh with different types of books that tell you about writing. And you might have your own writing style already, like you've read Stephen King on writing or different other books that have given you that advice, or you have your own as you do. But what I do agree, I really do like the way he shares his own advice, and he obviously has written many books and it is a best-selling author. And if you might want to check out his books. He creates the character, I think it's Easy Rollins, and he's written a lot of for both, I think it's also television. So Walter Mosley has been doing this a long time. So I hope you check out his books and also this book. It's very, very light, very easy to read, and I hope to continue with showing and telling for next week. Or when I do my next episode. And also, and going back, if you have questions about what I've covered today, sensations, emotions, the pedestrian in fiction, metaphor and simile, and so forth. And that way, you can share your own, I'm losing my voice now. You can share your own experiences about what it is that you want to do as a first-time writer, or another book that you're writing, and what advice that you got from the tips that Walter Mosley, excuse me, oh goodness, It's been one thing after another today. So, but anyway, I hope that you will take the time to listen to the episode. I apologize that my voice is going. I think it's pollen in the air. I don't know what it is. But I hope you'll read the book by Walter Mosley. This year you write your novel. I hope that you listen to the other episodes I've done on the Daily with Sol Stein through Spotify for podcasters. And I hope that you'll hopefully be able to get some good advice from the writing tips. I hope to continue on another episode. Hopefully next week, do a few more episodes. I know Monday I'm trying to work on having John and Destiny Constantin come to the show so they can talk all about their book, The Journey with Dad, which won a Wizard Award, which is a very prestigious children's award in literature. And I hope to have them on to talk all about that and their podcast, Chasing Stories. And like I said, I hope that you've enjoyed today's episode. I am working on a newsletter coming out hopefully this month. I do apologize for the delay. I hope to talk to my PAs, Samantha and Tara James, or Samantha Socorso and Tara James, and hopefully have this out hopefully this month. But I hope you're having a very good start to your first day of July. June has ended, July 1st. This is my husband's birthday month, so he'll be celebrating his birthday this month. And I hope everyone has a fantastic rest of your day. And thank you for listening, and I hope you'll support the podcast. And thank you for joining me today on the Daily with Sol Stein, now through Spotify for podcasters. Have an amazing and blessed rest of your Saturday. Thank you.